As parts of America reopen, Europe and Asia may offer lessons on how to do so without risking a second wave of infections. Also warnings.
I think we're going to see in the coming weeks and months, you know, who's doing it effectively and who maybe isn't.
And a pandemic spreads globally, streets fill with protesters, but traders just keep buying U.S. stocks.
Investors and analysts have been relentless in basically looking past what is happening this year.
Plus, the joy and the agony of shared Netflix accounts as the pandemic creates an explosion in streaming video. It's Tuesday, June 9th. I'm Mark Garrison with The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. We spoke on the podcast yesterday about moves to change funding and oversight for policing following the nationwide debate sparked by the killing of George Floyd. It includes a vote in Minneapolis to defund the department, all the way up to a plan from Democrats in Congress to increase oversight and make it easier to prosecute officers. Our national political reporter Eliza Collins explains how other cities are approaching this.
Minneapolis is probably gone the farthest at this moment, but New York City is going to give some of the massive $6 billion police budget to programs for communities of color. And so the mayor said that he did not say exactly how much, but he did say that there would be some shift of resources. The same thing is happening in Los Angeles. Other cities, San Francisco, Baltimore, Philadelphia, are talking about proposals like this. So these are major cities that are talking about shifting money from their police departments. These are also cities that likely have some of the larger police budgets. And so right now, it really depends how much they end up shifting over is how significant of a move this is.
President Trump weighed in on some of the recent discussion at a White House meeting with law enforcement.
There won't be defunding. There won't be dismantling of our police.
Joe Biden's campaign said he does not support defunding police. He has proposed changes, including more investment in community policing and banning chokeholds. The Democratic candidate was in Houston to meet privately with the family of George Floyd. The funeral service is set to feature a video message from Biden. That funeral is today in Houston, where he lived before moving to Minneapolis. Yesterday, hundreds of mourners from around the country viewed his body during a public viewing in a Houston church. The World Health Organization is calling on those who protest to be mindful of health during the pandemic. It was part of a larger warning that even though the situation may be improving in some countries, it is still worsening globally. The WHO says a record-breaking 136,000 new coronavirus cases were reported on Sunday, of which 75% came from countries mostly in the Americas and South Asia. We are exclusively reporting that 3M is suing an Amazon seller for offering what were described as 3M masks for more than 18 times their list price. 3M is the country's largest producer of N95 masks that are often worn by frontline healthcare workers. The seller, Mao Yu, couldn't immediately be reached for comment. Amazon says it's been working with 3M to block counterfeiters and price gougers. A new court ruling means Samsung's de facto leader is avoiding a second jail term. A South Korean court denied the prosecutor's request to arrest Lee Jae-yong for financial fraud in a 2015 merger between two Samsung affiliates. Prosecutors could try again if they have additional evidence. Samsung has rejected claims that Lee has directed or ordered any illegal activity. Right after this, trying to understand the latest rally in stocks alongside all the bad news in our world. We spoke on the podcast yesterday about solid gains for U.S. stocks on the same day leading economists declared that America had officially entered a recession in February. Whether it's the pandemic or the recent protests, there's frequently been a mix of negative news headlines and positive stock moves. Our markets columnist Mike Bird is here to help us try to square all that.
If you were just looking at U.S. equity markets, you might actually be surprised to hear there was still a pandemic going on. The S&P at a positive rate of return for the year. The NASDAQ actually at a new record high. Major tech stocks like Apple, Microsoft, really leading that rally. And the reason for that is simple. Investors and analysts just don't think that what's happening at the moment will impact their long-term earnings too much. Investors and analysts have been relentless in basically looking past what is happening this year, even as companies see huge unprecedented projected drops in revenue. They think that as long as the Federal Reserve and the US Department of Treasury manage in concert to make sure that the recovery actually happens, that people are eased into a fairly rapid recovery after the pandemic eases, with things like the stimulus checks that have already been sent out, with things like dollar swaps that the Fed is engaging in to make sure financial markets stay relatively calm. They think if all of that continues, if that level of effort continues, then you'll see a rapid recovery into 2021 and 2022. Obviously, that hinges on a huge number of questions about what happens with the virus. But basically, investors just don't see a reason to sell off based on what's happening at the moment. That may come to look in a few months to be far too optimistic. But right now, people are very much looking at what happens in 2, 3, 5, 10 years and expecting that the pandemic may not have as big of an impact as they'd feared in March.
While some stocks rise, many companies and whole industries still struggle during the pandemic, among them energy. BP plans to cut nearly 10,000 jobs, that is 14% of its workforce. After a very quick break, a preview of a challenge America may face. We'll look at countries in Europe and Asia that have emerged from lockdown and are now fighting to avoid a second wave of COVID-19 cases. Our reporters in Europe are looking at how reopenings there are playing out as countries emerge from coronavirus lockdowns. Restarting the economy without triggering a second wave of deadly infections is a tricky business, but some countries are seeing encouraging early results. We want to know what's behind this success and how it might work elsewhere. The Wall Street Journal's Jason Douglas is covering this from London and spoke with our Mark Stewart.
Many countries are seeing significant declines, yet there is still no vaccine. What is behind the success in preventing a second wave, at least for the moment?
What we've seen in a lot of countries is that basically people are still practicing a lot of social distancing, even though their economies have reopened. So people are still kind of keeping their distance. There have been these behavioral changes. People are wearing masks. And then the other important thing is things like mass gatherings are still pretty rare. The big protests we've seen in lots of countries over the death of George Floyd in the US notwithstanding, people can't go to football matches, lots of pubs and restaurants. If you go, there's all sorts of restrictions on how close you can get to other people. So even though places are opening up, there's still a fair bit of social distancing in place is probably one of the big reasons.
With that said, what can the rest of the world learn from these momentary victories? What are the takeaways?
There are a couple of things. One is you have to get the epidemic to a point where this is possible, if you see what I mean. So many of these countries, they kept their lockdowns in place until they really were pretty certain that they'd got on top of this disease, until they were getting very few daily cases and had really got the number of hospitalizations and seriously ill people really down quite far. That's probably the first lesson. The second is you really need to keep on top of any new little flare-ups. So what we've seen in lots of places that appear to be doing this successfully is they have this a very sophisticated test, trace, and isolate system. So they're able to pick up new cases quite quickly, track down anyone who that infected person has been in contact with, and then hopefully get them in quarantine either at home or in a special facility. So that's important too.
Yeah, let me follow up on that, because while there is certainly a desire to get back to normal life, there are still restrictions in place. We still see things such as quarantine and tracing. Just how important is all of that?
I think it's very important. I mean, certainly epidemiologists we spoke to for this story say it's probably the most important thing you can do. I mean, it's kind of one of the oldest things that we know about disease outbreaks and how to manage them, which is you've got to be able to find new cases quickly. You've got to be able to stop the disease spreading. And so these sort of systems are very, very important. Most countries now have them in place to a greater or lesser extent. I think we're going to see in the coming weeks and months, you know, who's doing it effectively and who maybe isn't.
Sure. And finally, Jason, it's important to stress that the success is in this very moment. What are the challenges still ahead?
For one thing, we have seen little flare-ups in a couple of countries, and there are places like Iran, which we probably are seeing a second wave. So there are a couple of exceptions to this general pattern that we're seeing. The biggest question I think people have at the minute is what happens when we move into the fall and into the winter, and when you start to find people are getting flu, symptoms which look very like COVID-19 in a lot of cases, will we be able to identify those people properly? Will we have enough sort of healthcare capacity if lots of people are falling sick with flu to look after people who may also have COVID? Will the fact we're all spending a lot more time indoors give this virus an opportunity to spread that it maybe doesn't have in the summer when we're, you know, still practicing social distancing? and spending a lot of time outdoors. And then finally, there's just a sort of complacency aspect to this, right? Which is people get fed up with this stuff and people slowly get back to normal. You don't get infected. You feel fine. You start doing things that, you know, when you were slightly more worried about this outbreak that you probably wouldn't have done. And all these happening at the same time in the fall and the winter, I think, is maybe the big question that we have. So there is one point on that, which is the Southern Hemisphere is moving into winter right now. So people are keeping a close eye on places like New Zealand and Australia to see how it plays out.
Sure. Jason Douglas, thank you for your insights.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Ever share something and wish you didn't? Or maybe something was shared with you and things got a little tense? That's what a lot of us are feeling right now in relation to our access to Netflix, Hulu, HBO Now, or whatever streaming service is needed for vital amusement while staying inside during the pandemic. As passwords are passed around, many people are learning painful lessons about the limits these accounts can place on how many people can stream at once. It can depend on how much you pay, and it's the kind of thing many people don't notice when they sign up, but has been revealed lately when families are inside and multiple people want to watch different things on different screens at the same time. We've got a story on WSJ.com about the family drama this can cause and what Netflix thinks about all of this. That is What's News for this morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. We are back with another updated episode this evening. I'm Mark Garrison with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.